Time for the final hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Chase McCabe here in the studio. Darren McFarland will join us in a moment. It's time for our weekly chat with Vanderbilt head football coach Clark Lee. He'll be followed by Mitch Light from The Athletic. We'll talk college football in general with him in our next segment. It's something we do every Tuesday at this time. Light after Lee. So Clark Lee joins us, and what do I need to hit, Chase? I don't want to cut Coach Lee off because I have a great story for him to start it off. So, Coach, here's the scenario. I'm at the Predators game on Saturday night doing my duties there, even though I'm not announcing the game, but I'm watching your game on the computer. Then I've got to, after the Predators game's over, I've got to go to a function with my wife, which I'm late for. Because I've got to know what happens at the end of the Vanderbilt-UConn game. So I have the stream on my phone, and I'm watching as best I can, trying not to get into a car wreck in downtown because it's a little, you know, it's Saturday night downtown. There's a lot going on. So I'm maneuvering my way around, and I turn on Lee Avenue, L-E-A, to get to Rocket Town where this charity event is going on, and the stream goes out. Because I don't know why. Like I guess you know there's a Wi-Fi thing or something, and I've got to figure as the field because you know they called all the timeouts, and so it takes forever for the ball to actually kick. So I'm scrambling. I turn the radio on, and I miss the kick, and I'm only hearing the aftermath, and I'm hearing the band play and the sound, and I'm like, did we make it? I think we made it. And so I thought it was fitting that I was on Lee Avenue as all of this drama was going down. But congratulations on the win.
Yeah, thanks. A couple of things. I think any sport fan has had those moments. And so I can relate to that with the streaming. The other thing is, you know, obviously there was a lot that went into that victory. I had no idea that you played a part too and just the way you navigated to your events. I appreciate that. I appreciate your efforts in that as well.
Yes, when I saw I could turn on Lee Avenue, I was like, something's right about this. I need to stay on this until after this kick.
That's great, man.
Well, it was fun. It was a game that certainly was not lacking in twists and turns and craziness. I'm sure from the sideline, you know, you had probably some heartburn going on there, but it's great to be able to get the great ending like that.
I think it's an important part of our journey, honestly, and I don't mean to frame everything over like based off the long term perspective, but you know we knew this it was going to be a fight. We just you know that's just where we are, and we're you know winning's hard, and we have to learn how to win. And I think I don't know in my time, you know, yeah, it was obviously playing for and supporting this program. I think that there are plenty of those games that have ended with that final touchdown from UConn as kind of the nail in the coffin, and you know, just the total confidence there from our offense to take the ball down and convert on a 4th-and-4, and then Joe to nail it in the end. I mean, I think that's just an important building block for us. And the more we learn to win through those various twists and turns, as you say, I think that's just maturity and growth as a program that will ultimately kind of deliver us to the results we know we're capable of as we continue to build.
A couple of specifics like that, I think you hit on a couple, but I also thought that the two-point conversions, to be able to get stops after you give up plays you don't like, everybody's a little bit down, that recovery to focus and stop the two-point conversions, of course, you just do the math, that was everything there.
Right. Yeah, it was. And you know, as I watch those plays, I think there's still so much more that we can do, and you know, it's hard to express this when you're inside of it, and I'm sure people that listen will be like, well, why don't you do more then? But it's like you're building this thing. It's a big undertaking where you're trying to kind of rewire the psychology of a program. You're trying to build discipline into the program and standards of performance, standards of operation. And then you have this other behemoth, which is, you know, how we experience games, how we play as a team, our personality on the field. And so little things like, you know, the way we adjust to those motions on the two-point plays that set up pick routes that were a little more open than I would have liked for them to be, you know, those are things that you experience, you teach off of, you adjust, and you become a little bit better as a program in those situations. Certainly to get those stops, though, is huge. Also felt like, you know, little things like the pressure we got on the field goal attempt at the start of the second half that forced a kick wide left, I thought was a great moment of effort from the defense, and obviously the fourth down stop too. So, you know, there's little things in there where you see the character of this team starting to be revealed, and now we need to build on that with a great effort in Gainesville this weekend.
Coach, one thing I'm seeing a lot, and really the college game and the pro game, and it came into play a lot in your game, is when you have the isolation of wide receiver versus defensive back, it looks like to me it's just so hard for the defensive back to make the play. You got all these really good receivers, like you have Chris Pierce, who's just is a big wide guy who, if it's one-on-one, he's so good at going up and grabbing it, and it's hard to defend him. He gets the pass interference that puts you in range for the winning field goal. And on the other side, they were making some really nice plays on the ball where your guy is right there trying to knock it out, and they were winning battles there. But it seems like there's a lot of matchups where teams are saying, I'm going to take my chances throwing it down the field, because if I don't get the catch, I might get interference too.
No, it's the outcomes tip in the offensive favor there, where it's you know, it's a completion or an interference. The two of the three are pretty good for the offensive side. But on ours, well, first of all, I think absolutely. I think the more we get comfortable, get Kenny comfortable putting the ball up to Chris and to Shep, you know, those two in particular who have the size to win on those 50-50 balls, you know, I think we're going to see more success and see more explosive plays in the passing game. On our side of it, you know, the challenge of the finish is one thing, but I think winning early in the snap has got to be the focus of the DB. So, you know, I think when we reviewed the film and took a peek at kind of how we got out of position, I felt like our leverages and our early fundamentals, footwork, and use of hands and press put us in, you know, not using the proper fundamentals put us in trail positions. And, you know, it's one thing for those balls to go up and for be truly a contested 50-50 ball. It's another thing when you're behind it and trying to run to catch up. We can do more early in the down to put ourselves in better positions at the finish. And I think when you do that, you're not panicking as much as a DB. You have a little more confidence to go out and play the ball.
Vanderbilt football coach Clark Lee is here with us on Darren, Donick, and Chase. And as you go through this building process, obviously your upperclassmen are going to be important as leaders on the team, but equally as important is you know, basically setting the standard for the younger guys, the freshmen. And you've had quite a few that have played meaningful minutes for you. So how important is that to, as they come in right away and are able to make an impact as you try and rebuild this thing like you've talked about?
Oh, it's huge. I mean, you know, what we're counting on the veteran players before even like leadership from them, we're counting on them to be willing to see this experience as different, to actually look at this program in a different light. And it's hard to do as a fourth, fifth year player. And yet we have had some guys step up and really, really buy in to what we're getting done here. You know, certain among those veteran players will emerge as leaders. And I think that's kind of still being, determined as we go. But you know, we've talked a lot about kind of shedding the past and stepping into our future as a program and you know, how that can be painful as you experience, you know, this search for identity, and you're trying to, you know, get all the competitive systems in place. But, you know, when you talk about your freshman class, you talk about guys that don't know any different, right? So that they the only thing they know is that they're playing football, the ball's put down, and they're going really hard at it. And the more we can use them, I think the more we, we actively build towards that future, but they have to earn that through practice. And so, you know, guys over time have earned the chance to be on the field. They know what they're doing. They've proven it in the workshop, so to speak. And so, as we move forward, we'll continue to look to get those guys involved, because every rep that they take is just investment in both the near future and on down the road.
How about somebody like C.J. Taylor? I know he played a fair amount at linebacker against UConn. Another freshman from Warren County. I know he's popular with the locals, but what have you seen out of him?
Well, C.J. Has quickly become a guy that I really connect with. You know, I don't know that when he first got here in the summer, it wasn't that he was necessarily had the measurements or the numbers or there wasn't anything that really stood out about CJ. And then all of a sudden the ball was put down and snapped and he just started flying around the field. And it was evident from the first fall camp practice all the way through his time on our scout team. This guy just loves to play football and he has a different speed when he's pursuing the ball. He's physical on the perimeter. There's so many strengths there as a player. And so again, he's earned the right to be on that field and we're excited for him to keep, continue to push to expand his role. We think he can be, you know, a dynamic player for us because he's just a good football player. There's something when he lines up and again, the ball's put in play that he's going to find it. And he's going to find it with an attitude and a competitive spirit that is representative of what Vanderbilt football should be. And so anxious for him to keep moving to expand his role on the team because we think he's a reflection of what this program needs to be.
As you mentioned earlier, you have Florida this weekend. They're coming off a tough loss to Kentucky, but going down to the swamp is never an easy task. But as you all have gone through this journey, you know, how do you feel that you're feeling about this going down there to play this Florida team? And what are some early takeaways you have from watching film?
They're talented, you know, and Dan Mullen is a really good offensive mind and they spread the ball out and run the quarterback and they're going to test us that way. You know, going on the road is a challenge. Although I think you know we're going to be excited for that. It's a great environment to play a football game, and our guys will be keyed up for that. I thought you know yesterday's meetings and walkthrough had the right focus and spirit to them. You know, I'm anxious to see practice this afternoon. You know, we need to come out and build on the week that we had last week, where I felt like we had our best week of prep, and so. We're excited about the challenge. Florida's a good team, but, you know, we're interested in taking kind of the newfound formula where we have less self-inflicted wounds. We're playing a smarter brand of football, playing really competitive and hard for four quarters. And to take our swing at a good opponent on the road will be a lot of fun.
Talking to Clark Lee, Vanderbilt head football coach, that game is 11 a.m. against the Gators down in the swamp coming up on Saturday. Coach, one last one for you. In more of your big picture, you talked about the freshman that Chase was asking you about. Another thing I've noticed, and I think you've talked about this some, in this day and age where you could revamp your roster in the short term with the transfer rule and things like that, you guys have chosen more of the long path development, not the quick fix. So tell me about that philosophy, because I think it would be easy for a first-year coach to say, okay, I've been a lot of places. Let's go to that transfer portal and let's just reshape everything.
Well, I think there's to fill your roster with transfers, you have to purge your roster of players. And I think that you can get into a conversation about, you know, what is the right thing to do and how do you operate with integrity? You know, this is my school, you know, it's my home. And I got a great respect for all the guys that chose to come here and that have earned the right to graduate from this university. And I want to make sure that in my first year that I stepped into this program and fully embraced where it was, and really gave guys an opportunity to change along with the program. And it just felt like, I didn't want this to be a short-term fix. I'm not looking to see how quickly we can win so that I can move on. Again, this is a place that I'd like to be for a long time. So for me, it was more about the foundation, wanted to lay the foundation, wanted to get it set so that we can build on it. And that's not to say that we won't, you know, use the transfer portal in the future, because I think it's a great opportunity to find, a match for our culture and our environment. And it's certainly a way to enhance your depth chart and to add some experience where we don't have experience. But to me, in year one, it was less about how quickly can we flip the roster around and more about like, all right, let's step into this. Let's give people a chance to buy in and change. We know this is going to be a long road anyhow. Let's function with integrity here and do it the right way and know that both the patience and again, operating the right way will be rewarded over time. And so, we'll see how the transfer portal looks this all season, that there's a fit for us that can help us be more competitive to build the best possible team we can build. But our formula is going to be about recruiting and developing to close the talent gap. And, we want to stay true to that and not be turning our roster over every other year.
Clark, thanks a lot for joining us. As always, good luck in Gainesville on Saturday. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys. Y'all take care. Good to be with you. Thanks.
All right. That's Vanderbilt head football coach Clark Lee. Big win over UConn. Now conference games the rest of the way for the Commodores. And you asked me the question, Chase, off the air before we had coach, what are the prospects now? I mean, you'd really love to get one somewhere in there. You know that they're going to be an underdog in probably, safe to say, every one of these games, maybe a sizable underdog in all of the games. Yet, they don't play Alabama. They don't play some of the big dogs, right? They play good, solid SEC teams, all of which will say, we got to beat Vanderbilt. This is a game that we cannot lose. So so to answer your question, I'd like to see if they can put themselves in position to win one or two of these. I think it would mean a lot in where they feel like they are. Based on his answer, they did not take he's trying to be nice about it. I think he does want to win with integrity, but I also think he feels like he's taken the long view. He wants to develop players for 4 years at the risk of them leaving. You can fly the coop now. You can go, if you do well at one level, you say, I can move up. I might be able to play at this. But I think he feels like this formula will work. When you get transfers left and right, you have a lot of guys coming in for 1 year, 2 years. But I think you're trying to sell something that is, stability, development. So this is going to be something to watch as we go forward. We'll see if they can see how they hang in the SEC from here on out.
Yep.
When we come back, Mitch Light will join us, and we'll go around college football. It was such an exciting week of games. Last week, we'll look ahead as well to what's coming up on Saturday. Stay tuned. This is Darren Donick and Chase.
Thank you, Gary. We'll talk a little Preds before we get out of here at the end of the show. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase, Light after Lee, Mitch Light from The Athletic now joins us. Mitch, it was a statement weekend for some teams. One of those teams was Georgia. They were a big favorite over Arkansas. Arkansas had come in with that big win over A&M. They were undefeated. And Georgia just hammered them. And they become now the fifth team since 1950. That's 70 years, over 70 years. A team that has scored over 200 points and allowed 25 or less points in their first five games. Can you name the last team to do it? Before Georgia has just now added themselves to that list?
I cannot, and I know silence is not good radio, so I can sit here and think about it, but why don't you just share the news?
20 years ago, Mitch, Virginia Tech did it. And the significance, the reason I'm bringing it up, is because Georgia's now the fifth team. The previous four teams all went on to win a national championship other than that Virginia Tech team in 2001. You had Florida State in 93. You had Alabama in 79 and Oklahoma in 1956. So let me just start there. Do you think this Georgia team is going to ultimately be the national champion?
So, but by that stat, you're saying it's good when you score a ton of points.
And you don't give up any points. Yes. Okay, the stat says you're very good.
I'm going to take some notes so I can help out with my further analysis.
Yeah.
Are they going to win? Sure. I mean, if I had to bet on a team right now,
you're taking Georgia.
I'd probably take Georgia slightly over Alabama. We saw what they've done. The competition has varied this year, the teams they played, from Clemson, who still has a great roster, to Arkansas, who had, before Saturday, the best resume in the country. You know, they weren't the best team in the country, but they had the best resume in the country. And they've just been completely dominant. And this is what kind of what we see, like recruiting. I say this all the time. Recruiting isn't everything. It means a lot. And when you have a lot of, you don't miss on a lot of guys, and they're all upperclassmen at the same time, and they're all kind of playing their roles and selfless and all that, to throw out all of your coaching cliche you want, this is what you get. You get a defense that it's this good. And we might have talked about this a couple of weeks ago, but you look around to, like, Florida State, they're Georgia cast-offs on defense, playing key roles on other Power 5 yeah. teams around the country. Like, guys that just weren't good enough to be featured players on this team. So, yeah. And, you know, did anyone think when they found out that JT Daniels wasn't going to play, like, that was really going to hurt Georgia? I didn't. I mean, I just have so much confidence in that defense, and they just kind of set the tone so early in that game. And, you know, I think Jeff Schultz, our columnist here for Atlanta, columnist for The Athletic, you know, obviously longtime Atlanta sports columnist, he made the point, which is probably true, you know, this Georgia team is great. Do they need JT Daniels to win a national championship? Yeah, probably. They need to maximize their quarterback play. They're not going to win it with Stetson Bennett or a backup quarterback, but I think they can get by without JT Daniels. So to answer your question, yeah, they're on as good of an early season run as we've seen, you know, in years.
Yep. Alabama also made their statement against Ole Miss. Cincinnati went into South Bend and made their statement. They beat Notre Dame. They're undefeated, and they've got Temple, UCF, Navy, Tulane, Tulsa, USF, SMU, and East Carolina. They got one ranked team the rest of the way. If Cincinnati runs the table, are they going to be the third team in outside of Alabama and Georgia?
It's, you know, so hard to answer now because there's so many variables that need to, you know, how do they look? You know, if they, so far they passed every test. You know, they got outplayed for a half against Indiana and then dominated the second half, and they looked the part against Notre Dame. You know, if they go out and they win every game by 14, 21 points, they run SMU off the field, that strengthens their case. If they, you know, close wins, get a lucky bounce here or there, then you know, you got to look at the complete resume. My gun to my head, I'd say yes. If they go undefeated, they will be in the college football playoff, based on the chaos that's going on. But it's so difficult. You know, just, you kind of got to, I mean, I know that's what we do. We talk about it, we speculate, but it's like, you got to see the body of work before you really judge how good a team is. But I would say they're in a very good shape, very good position. You know, obviously this is not breaking news, but the thing that's hurt them is that Indiana has not been nearly as good as we thought. And Notre Dame hasn't played great too. They could use Notre Dame. They need Notre Dame to get on a roll, and they need SMU to stay hot. That would help their case immensely.
Yeah, and then you had Oregon with their perfect opportunity, and Pac-12 desperately would love a presence in the college football playoffs, and they go to Stanford, and they have to play catch-up the whole game, and they eventually caught up, went to overtime, and lost. So does that eliminate the Ducks? And if so, no. What about that last spot? I mean, it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, I think everybody can point to Alabama, Georgia, and say the SEC is getting two in, but I think those next two spots are going to be really interesting.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. And I don't think it eliminates Oregon. They have right now, especially with looking like Ohio State's kind of right at the ship. I always talk about this in the college basketball when you bubble talk. What do you have in your back pocket? Who has that best win among the bubble teams?
Yep.
No team, I'll say right now, I don't think any team in the country is going to have a better win than at Ohio State if Ohio State, you know, stays hot. So that, and we've seen teams, you got to treat every team, you got to treat things, teams fairly. Like, we've seen, you know, Alabama lose to Ole Miss. We've seen Ohio State lose to Iowa. The year they lost to Purdue, I don't think they got in. The years kind of blend together. But teams are allowed a mulligan as long as they've proven that they can be good. And Oregon has proven it can be good. Now, they're not playing as well. And one thing I want to say about that game, anyone who wants to talk about ref conspiracies with the officials about leagues, when there's questionable calls, a lot of times it's bad officiating, you know. Oregon had that game won. Then there was a pass interference, I think, on fourth down, and Stanford got another down, and they scored. Don't you think the Pac-12, as a league, wanted Oregon to win that game? So just throwing that out there, that struck me while I was watching that, because so many people think there's all these conspiracies with officiating. I think sometimes just they make bad calls.
How about the game in Lexington? How about Kentucky actually beating Florida after everybody was starting to feel really good about Florida? Florida has absolutely dominated them over the last 34 years, and they stumble for now only the second time in 35 years, but handed to Kentucky. I mean, they took it to them, and I'll tell you what, they had that stand at the end, and they got some penalties, and they pushed them back, and they got a nice review where his knee was down, and next thing you know, Kentucky's now undefeated, 5-0.
Yeah, the thing about Kentucky that's impressive, and you know, Mark Stoops has always done a good job with his defense, but if you would have told me this, if you'd have told me in late August that Kentucky's 5-0, I'd say, wow, you know, Will Levis is probably, you know, putting up 350 yards a game, and Liam Cohen, the new offensive coordinator, they're working their magic, and Wendell Robinson's, you know, playing like we thought he'd be playing coming out of high school. The running backs are going wild behind the offensive line. Really not. The offense has not been as good as we thought. So I still think there's potential for offensive growth at Kentucky because they have the pieces. They've been getting it done with defense. And, you know, so that's the credit for Kentucky part. And it's the Florida, what do you, you know, you look so good, Florida. Yeah, take Alabama to the wire. You really dominate Tennessee. You look the part there. And they go up, and all the questions about Emory Jones start coming back. Maybe he's not the quarterback. And it just angers Florida fans so much because they know the potential of that program, and they just don't have the players. They don't recruit at the level that they should. And it's all great when they win, and Dan Mullen's going to out-scheme everyone. But then when they go lose to Kentucky or something like that, then now the Florida fans, rightfully so, in my opinion, say, why can't we recruit? Not necessarily maybe to the elite level that Georgia and Alabama, but they're not, their roster doesn't compare to those teams. So that's just the kind of a side thing that, you know, obviously credit Kentucky, but that's gotten the Florida fans riled up.
Talking to Mitch Light from The Athletic. Mitch, I notice in The Athletic, the Heisman straw poll is led by Bryce Young. Not a big surprise. My question is, with him, as where he sits right now, you know, there's always this process with a first year Alabama quarterback, how good is he? You know, so tell me what you think. Where does he compare with his predecessors?
Yeah, I partake in that straw poll, and this is the first week we did it this year, and it was tough. I mean, you know, previous years there had been some obvious candidates there, and I did not have Bryce Young. I was going to kind of go with everyone else. Young's numbers are great, but I kind of stepped back and said, okay, you know, he's the quarterback of Alabama. He's got a great offensive line. I mean, it's the age-old, and that's kind of why you're asking the question, the argument we have every year. It's like, how good is the Alabama quarterback? How good is the Ohio State quarterback when they're outclass everyone? So I actually had Bijan Robinson from Texas 1 and Will Anderson from Alabama 2 and Kenny Pickett from Pitt 3. So Young, I mean, the buzz in the offseason was he was going to be the most dynamic, the most talented of all the Alabama quarterbacks in the Saban era. He has been very good so far. I think it's still incomplete. I mean, he wasn't stressed. You know, was that their biggest game so far this year, the Ole Miss game? Maybe. But he wasn't really stressed. They got such a big lead. You know, that's kind of what I want to see out of a young quarterback. When in Ohio State's faced it to some degree with C.J. Stroud more than Alabama and Bryce Young. What can he do? Can he make the tough throws in the third quarter when it's a tight game? And I know they were stressed against Florida. I should say that was definitely a bigger game there. But I mean, he's in his first year as a starter. He didn't kind of burst on the scene like Tua did. I think Bryce Young is kind of leading his Heisman straw polls more because there's really no other obvious candidates. I mean, I know he was a preseason favorite because he's a quarterback at Alabama. So I guess my answer would be incomplete. Obviously a great player, but I think we've got a lot more, you know, good things to see from him in the future.
We just talked to Clark Lee, as you know. They get the win over UConn. Here they are, 2-3. Only conference games remaining. We were trying to assess their chances of getting a win in conference play. It doesn't sound like much, but I think it would be a nice thing. But I think we all believe they're going to be a sizable underdog pretty much every week. So give me your thoughts on their chances.
Yeah, I mean, Missouri is the one that jumps off the page because of their defensive struggles. And, you know, we saw that the Tennessee game, obviously, all the credit to Tennessee. They came out there and were confident, but Missouri looked like they hadn't scouted, you know, a Josh Heupel offense ever, which is kind of funny since Josh Heupel used to be the offensive coordinator there. You know, and that's Vanderbilt, despite the injury to Ramon Davis, has, you know, shown the ability to run the ball. I think they had 250. It was the Stanford game, they rushed for 250 yards. So, you know, it's just, this isn't a cop-out. You just never know. I mean, that Derek Mason's 2019 team that went 1-7 in the SEC, I think lost every league game by 17 points or more, and that they just weren't competitive, but they beat Missouri at home, and Missouri was pretty good that year. So, I mean, the answer is obviously you got to play the games on paper. Missouri looks like the obvious one. South Carolina, I guess, would be the next one, but, you know, South Carolina is playing better than Vanderbilt, obviously, right now, and, you know, that'd be a tough one. So, yeah, it's just kind of, you just want to kind of see, it's not really all about wins and losses. It's about how do they look? Do they improve? How do they fight? All those, you know, again, all those cliches. You just want to see them be competitive as possible.
Talking to Mitch Light of The Athletic. So, speaking of South Carolina, they're in Knoxville this weekend, taking on the Vols after the Vols go and just manhandle Missouri, 62-24 last week. And what you just said about how South Carolina is playing, are you also worried that maybe Tennessee, and as they still try and go through everything, and Josh Heupel and building the new culture, that there could be a little bit of a letdown back home in Knoxville?
Yeah, I mean, that's the obvious, what you're concerned about. You're feeling good about yourself, and, you know, things came just alarmingly easy. I guess that's not the right way to say it, because alarming is negative connotation, but if you're Missouri, they came alarmingly easy for Tennessee. So, I mean, I think that's probably the focus in the building this week is, you know, keeping their focus. Tennessee's not good enough to take anyone lightly. You know, South Carolina's a team that, you know, lost 16-10 at home to Kentucky. They are really struggling to score some points. They scored 23 against a not-so-great Troy team. You know, they got a good running game. They really don't threaten you too much at the wide receiver position there. So, I mean, Tennessee, what, it's a 10-12-point favorite, or is that about it?
Ten and a half, I think, when I look.
Yeah, yep. I mean, that sounds about right. You know, they're clearly the better team. They're playing better right now. But this is the type of, you know, you want to see them take a step forward by taking care of business. Now, they're not going to run them off the field like they did in Missouri, but if they can just, like, a solid, you know, 27-14 type game, I think that'd be a nice step forward for this program. But I think, kind of, Chase, what you referred to is that's got to be the message in the building. They've got to stay focused, that, you know, so they won a road game, big deal. Now it's time to move on to the next one.
Well, and, you know, I know that the message from Josh Heupel and his coaches isn't going to be we're playing for six wins, but when you're being realistic, that's what you're trying to get to, and be bowl eligible, have that extra game. And to do that, in my opinion, you have to win at home this weekend, because even though Ole Miss is licking their wounds after Alabama, I think Ole Miss is the better team. They're not going to beat Alabama in Tuscaloosa. I don't think they're going to beat Kentucky and Lexington either. They're certainly not going to beat Georgia and Knoxville, and that leaves you know, the last two games out of conference and then Vanderbilt. So to stay on schedule for that, this is very important.
Yeah, no doubt about it. No doubt about it. I mean, you look at the games, like you said, you're going to be favored. They've got three wins. They'll probably be favored in three more games, this one and the last two. And you know, they could lose one of the games they're favored. They could win the other ones. But, yeah, that would be a nice step forward, just tangible progress going to a bowl game. So, yeah, you don't want to put too much – in year one, you don't want to put too much importance on, you know, one home game. But by virtue of what they did last week, this kind of sets up South Carolina's, you know, the biggest game they've had there under Josh Heupel.
Is Hendon Hooker – he's obviously been named the starter. Is he showing you enough?
Yeah, I think so. In fact, I mean, I'm far from a quarterback expert. I liked what I saw from him at Virginia Tech. I thought when he transferred there and, you know, then Milton, and I heard all the Milton buzz, and again, I like everyone else. I saw Milton play two or three times at Michigan, but I liked what I saw, seen a Hooker at Virginia Tech, and I like what I've seen him at Tennessee, so I don't see why he would not be the guy going forward.
Penn State at Iowa. Who wins?
Well, last week I picked Maryland. I was like, home field.
Yikes.
I was living a lie. They're winning the turnover. They can't keep winning the turnover battle. Their offense stinks.
They got shredded.
Four turnovers. Yeah, four turnovers. So you know what? I'm picking Penn State because Iowa can't keep winning the turnover battle. So I'm picking Penn State.
You're not a believer in the Hawkeyes.
I didn't say that. I just don't know. Yeah,
He's a believer in Jimmy Frank.
Exactly. Great game, though. Obviously, I mean, I think you've seen – I don't have it in front of me, but it's like, did you guys see the stat? The first regular season top five Big Ten matchup not involving Michigan or Ohio State since like 52 or something like that.
Yeah, I believe
the early 60s. Yeah, Minnesota and someone else. So, yeah, it's great to see Both, you know, I wouldn't say these programs are like newcomers. They both had, you know, Iowa's been a consistent top 20 program, almost had the playoff in 2015, and Penn State's obviously a great program, but it's nice to see some other teams in the top five.
Be a great atmosphere. 3 o'clock Saturday afternoon on Fox. I'm assuming that's going to be Gus, right? 3 o'clock big game on Fox. Got to be Gus.
Usually the big noon kickoff is Fox is Gus, but the Red River Rivalry is on ESPN or ABC for the first time in years.
That's correct.
Fox.
Yep, that's
so
correct.
I'm guessing. I don't know how they don't send their number one.
He's not doing Maryland, Ohio State. That's the early Fox game. There's no way he's doing Maryland. Yeah, it's got
to
be.
Yeah, there's no way they're not sending them to the top five battle. So yeah, we'll get those guys. And that's always a good. They're a good crew. Joel Klatt does a really good job too.
Yeah, agreed. Hey, thanks for the visit as always. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. See you guys.
Mitch Light from The Athletic. Good stuff from him as always. We'll switch gears, come back, and finish up. Preds in Carolina to take on the Hurricanes. They've made some roster moves, and somebody's not coming back. We'll tell you about it on the other side as you listen to Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase, our show is presented by Creation CBD, products curated for life. If you would like to be in the building with us Saturday afternoon at Bridgestone Arena, Predators' final preseason game against the Carolina Hurricanes, where they'll be tonight in Raleigh. So last road game is tonight. Final home preseason game is Saturday afternoon. If you would like to win tickets to that, be lucky caller 5 right now. It's 615-737-1025, 737-1025. Lucky caller 5 will win a pair of tickets to see the Preds and the Hurricanes. Good luck. That's our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Just when Elijah answers the phone, say, my caller 5? And maybe you'll be. Hopefully you will. Good luck. Predators have made some roster moves. So it was announced today that they had sent Matt Luff, who I got a chance to talk to in postgame from the Patron Platinum Club Saturday evening. Really nice guy. Guy who came over from the Los Angeles Kings. I think he's going to factor into their plans. It's just not going to be right away. Cole Smith, Frederick Allard, Matt Tennyson, all sent to Milwaukee. They also did the same. They had to waive Rem Pitlick. Everybody, those guys passed through waivers. They're off to Milwaukee. But Rem Pitlick, guys, was claimed by the Minnesota Wild.
Yep.
I guess they must have watched his college games. The ex-Gopher picked up by the Minnesota Wild. So he's going to now join the Wild. So they've lost Rem Pitlick, a guy who played 10 games for him last year.
Tough. I think he's got a chance to be an NHL player. And there's always a group of players that get to this point in their career where they're just caught in a numbers game. There's been a lot that the Predators have picked off from other rosters and turned into good players on their roster, and then the vice versa. You gave a great reference, probably the biggest one they've ever been burned on. It happened during the season.
Yep.
Was Rich Peverly back in the day, who blossomed.
But they didn't. I mean, they were stuck. They didn't have a choice. I mean,
they had a choice. You always have a choice, but it's a tough call. They liked him, but
Steve Sullivan was coming back, so they had to clear that spot.
And also, I think at the time they had a guy named Cal O'Reilly,
brother
of Ryan O'Reilly, who they thought could still be a good player.
Which
they
that
were
was
wrong.
An unfortunate. Well, he got hurt when he got hurt and broke his foot, or I forgot exactly what the injury was. That just really changed him because he showed a lot of promise.
He flashed. He flashed. Yeah. And that's why it's so hard with guys like Rem Pitlick, because you can say, hey, if I stay with this guy, maybe he blossoms. But right now, it was hard to make a case that he makes this team day one. And that's the only way you could do this without waiving him. So they had to risk waiving him. As Darren pointed out, he played his college hockey in Minnesota. Minnesota has got a lot of salary issues. They might have a little – every team's different. So every team's maybe got room at the one position. Now, they have to keep him on their roster.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. Like, they have to like him enough to say he's on our team to start the year. And if they want to send him down, they've got to send him back through waivers, and maybe the Predators can get it back up. But this is that fringe 4A guy right now that it's a tough call. So I know they didn't want to lose him, but he's now on the Wild.
Yeah, he's 24 years old. I like him. He's worked hard. I mean, I know he's wanted to – but – he had played 10 games last year. I think he played a game the year before. He's had 11 shots. He's been in all the camps. We've seen him in training camp and preseason. And like I said, nice guy. There's just never really been anything that's really stood out to me. I mean, look, we're talking about the NHL. And like you said, I mean, 4A guys are, you know, really good in Milwaukee. They really stand out, you know, the next level below. But if you don't stand out in the NHL, then that's kind of a problem. And just my two cents, I just never thought – I kept waiting for Rem Petlick to kind of shine when he was given opportunities. And I just – there was never really much or any wow moments. There wasn't anything that was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Like, other guys stand out. Like, that's how, like, this whole Tanner Jeannot and Matthew Olivier, like, they stood out immediately. Like, Rem Petlick has never – I mean, he's been around last couple of years, and there's never been, for me, like, a real – it doesn't even have to be a wow moment. It's just catching my eye, and it's just like, other than I keep watching him, I'm like, okay.
Yep, there's always those late bloomers, though. Your worst fear is that he keeps getting better, and then, oh,
and going back
happens,
home.
Going back up.
You never know.
That could be a double-edged sword going back home. But in the meantime, it also illustrates, I think, what's at stake tonight.
Yeah.
And so you still have on the roster Afanasyev and Philip Tomasino. You still have Jeremy Davies in this mix, who did not, in this wave of defensemen they set down, get sent down. That tells you that he is in the mix here. He's got a chance. I would expect him to be in the lineup tonight. They've announced they put the roster out there. So I think those are three guys to keep your eye on tonight in kind of a battle for the last spot or two.
Well,
and I give you guys both a lot of credit on recognizing Afanasyev early to say this guy's made a jump. He's got a legit shot. I would not have circled him on a guy that would make it this far this year. I feel down the road.
Well,
for sure he's a prospect, but right now having a chance to make the team, this is a real thing.
And I didn't think he'd have a chance to make the team out of camp. I knew that there was a lot of good things about him and that I thought that there was a chance you'd see him at some point this year. But I didn't think it'd be this early.
I didn't call it. I just kept saying, this is my reference point. If you go back and listen to the tape, every time I kept bringing up, and I brought him up a lot last week, I said he is going to make that conversation behind closed doors very, very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of, you know, I'm not predicting it. I'm kind of leaving, you know, I'm leaving all kinds of wiggle room.
Well, you asked me the question. I forgot exactly how you worded it, but if you had to pick one.
Yes, and I said, if I'm being honest, yes, and I did ask you, Chase, honestly, who's been better right now to this point, Afanasyev or Tomasino? And I said, if I'm answering it honestly, Afanasyev has been the better. He's looked better to this point.
Yep, and I agreed with you, but then I countered with, but I still feel like that they want to give Tomasino every possible chance to make this roster and to succeed.
And they are.
And they are.
He's, in my opinion, he's behind.
He is.
Afanasyev. He just is. I'm just telling you, this kid has got my attention. I am all about a guy that I used to just call Igor, but now we've grown. We've grown together, and it's more than just – he's just more than Igor to me.
Yeah. Well,
one of the things you hear is it's not just the goals that he's scoring. It's the complete game. He's big.
He's
6 foot
a
four.
Big frame, man.
Yes, and they like that. This is another reason that Pitlick was caught in the numbers game, and I think they were willing to risk losing him, is they're trying to get bigger. Cody Glass is bigger. Phil Myers, bigger. Mm-hmm. You know, the guys they are trying to bring along here, they like the size. They like the identity, the toughness that they want to play with. Matt Luff, a guy who got waived, I think they like him. And I know, Darren, you guys got a chance to talk to him after Saturday's game. They like what he brings. He's not a flashy guy, but
he's happy to be here, too. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, he's happy to be here. Now, we'll see if he gets a chance down the road. I'm sure numbers, it just plays out that way, right?
People are going to go down, and he's
going to get a chance. There's no doubt. But let me just say this selfishly. Chase knows this. Selfishly, all that being said about Igor Afanasyev, you know, big body, the way he's played, just all the good on the ice, like selfishly off the ice. I also want to make the – he has got quite the personality, man. Yeah. I am a huge fan of his personality. We jumped in the elevator with him Saturday night at Bridgestone Arena, and he remembered us from Centennial. This is a 20-year-old kid from Russia. And I know he's been over here in the States for a while now, but – He remembered – this is a brief encounter Wednesday at Centennial, and he's just – I mean, he has got a great personality. I think he is going to be a fan favorite when he cracks the lineup for good. That's just
– no doubt.
I'm just putting that out there right now. He is going to become quickly a fan favorite.
So when you watch and listen to the game tonight, and the game is on TV tonight, Mace is with the Carolina broadcasters on Bally Sports. Then Trip Tracy will join Mace and I on Saturday for the finale.
Oh, cool.
But tonight, you're going to see more of a real NHL lineup. So that's why it's so big for guys like Davies, Tomasino, Afanasyev, guys who are on the bubble. I don't know that you're going to keep both Tomasino and Afanasyev on opening night. I'm not saying it's a competition. I mean, long term, I think it's good that they're both pushing. I think so, too. They both have the ability to send down without waving them. So something to watch for tonight.
Congratulations, Chris Fraker, Lucky Caller 5. Thanks for listening, Chris. It pays to listen to the show. We'll see you Saturday afternoon in Bridgestone Arena, Predators and Hurricanes. That will do it for our show today. Speaking of Predators, Hurricanes, tonight I'll have pregame for you starting at 5:30 right here on these airwaves. Pete and Hal will have your call, puck drop at 6. Have a great rest of your day. Continue to be safe. We'll talk to you tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. We'll see you then.